So how are you this morning?
Under the circumstances, I'm doing well.
So under the circumstances, okay.
As well as I can.
Okay, so you're attending for the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. Could you just please state your full name, your ADC number for us for the record?
Leo Duran Jones, 7274-54.
Okay, Mr. Jones, I'm going to introduce you to the board members this morning that are going to be conducting your hearing. To my far left, your right, would be the Honorable Luis Quinones. Coming down the line is the Honorable David Neal. In the middle, you have the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is our board chair. Sir, to my immediate left, you have the Honorable Mrs. Gail Rittenhouse. Sir, my name is Michael Johnson. I am going to be acting as your hearing lead this morning. Also with us, sir, this morning, representing the Department of Corrections, as well as the parole officer, as well as your parole officer, is Mr. Turner, sir.
Okay.
I think you can see Mr. Turner up on the screen now. Sir, prior to your hearing today, you received and you signed a notification form that advised you that you were going to have this board's hearing today. You recall signing that form, sir?
Yes.
On that form, you were notified of your right to appear and speak on your own behalf or to hire a licensed attorney to represent you. Sir, did you hire an attorney to represent you at your own expense or are you representing yourself today?
I represent myself.
Okay. At this time, sir, I'd like to swear you and Mr. Turner in. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, and do you so affirm?
Yeah.
I do.
Okay, so your hearing today will be conducted in two phases. In phase one, the board will make a determination whether the terms and conditions of your community supervision have been violated. In phase two, sir, the board will make a determination whether to revoke or reinstate you on your community supervision. We're going to start out in phase one, sir. In phase one, you have three allegations listed on your warrant. I am going to read to you each of those allegations. When I read you the allegations, sir, I need you to state whether the allegations are either true or false. Do you understand what I'm requesting, sir?
Yes.
Okay, the first allegation.
Probable cause hearing.
Okay. So we're looking at the wrong thing.
He's already out.
So, sir, you have received your probable cause hearing in front of the hearing officer.
Yes.
At the hearing, the probable cause officer found that there was probable cause. Do you have anything else to add to that, sir?
Excuse me?
Do you have anything else that you may want to add to your hearing that you had with the probable cause officer?
Well, at least when I spoke to the probable cause officer, in regards to the allegation point, I dealt with there were some issues that I had when I received the violation report. I'm sorry, I'm really not too good in public speaking or anything like that, so I apologize, but the issue that I had with the, which I didn't understand how there was probable cause for it, if the allegation was that
discuss that, okay?
Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. Based on the findings of the probable cause officers and the Department of Corrections, information contained in the warrant number 2019W0152, I'm going to move the finding, Mr. Jones, was delinquent as he did violate the terms and conditions of the supervision, that he was delinquent, that he may have lapses about the lapses to criminal ways or company.
Second.
Agreed.
Okay, motion by myself. Second by Ms. Rittenhouse. Agree, Mr. Quinones, Mr. Moore, Dr. Wright. Okay, sir, we're going to go into phase two of the hearing. During phase two, the board will make a determination whether to revoke or reinstate you on your community supervision. We're going to start out phase two with first getting some additional information from the parole officer, Mr. Turner. And then after we get the information from Mr. Turner, sir, I'm going to go over some information with you in the warrant, see if the board has any additional questions. And at that time, you would have the opportunity to present any information that you feel that's relevant to your case, okay? Mr. Turner.
Yes, sir. Jones was released from ADC custody on 10-3-2017 and arrested on 1-16-2019 by ADC on tech violations. At that time, there were misdemeanor charges for domestic violence and criminal damage noted. He was back to ADC custody on 1-16-2019 with a CSED of 7-2-2020, zero abscondes. Current convictions, 2002, commitment A, count 4, armed robbery, 10 years, 6 months. 2002, commitment A, count 8, armed robbery, 10 years, 6 months. 2002, commitment B, count 5, manslaughter, 18 years. 2002, commitment C, count 4, armed robbery, 10 years, 6 months. 2002, commitment C, count 14, armed robbery, 10 years, 6 months. He has no other prior convictions noted. This is his first term in ADC with a CUIR score of 3-3, mental health score of 1, substance abuse score of 3. STG information, self-admitted to being a member of the criminal street gang 10th Avenue Boot Hill Crips of the Westside City Crips. There are no other prior terms on supervision noted. Disciplinary is moderate with drugs and promoting prison contraband. There are no under arrest. He has a GB score of G3, V4. Status of charges, per parole supervisor Underwood as of 3-13-2018. Charges were of misdemeanors were out of the city court and the victim refuses to prosecute.
Okay, so I see that when you were first released, you were approved to stay with your brother, Mr. Ernie Jones, at 8608 West Security Avenue in Collison. Then you were approved to move with your mother, Florin Jones, at 6324 North Black Canyon Highway here in Phoenix, sir. Were you still standing? Where were you standing at the time that you was arrested, sir?
With your mom,
okay. It also says that you did work during that period of time. It looked like you started off working at Peddler's Sun and Produce. And then it looks as you went to Waster for refrigeration school. Then you dropped out and was unemployed. And then you said that you were working for a temp agency in January. So where were you working? Were you working at this time, sir?
Well, what actually happened was when I was released, I was staying with my brother until about October.
Uh-huh.
When I moved before I moved with my mom, and I did start off working at that restaurant, and I ended up starting work. I ended up going back to school. During that time, my brother's wife, she kind of started having an issue with the fact that I wasn't bringing any money into the house, so that's when I stopped going to school, and I started working. I was working through a temp agency for about a month and a half until like late June last year. My assignment ended. I went to the Social Security office to get a replacement copy of my Social Security card. During that time, I found out that my date of birth said June 6th instead of June 26th, so I had to go get my birth certificate. When I went to get my birth certificate, I found out that my mom didn't put my name on my birth certificate, so I had to go through the whole process of trying to get my name put on my birth certificate. And I was 15 when I went to prison. You know, nobody ever, I'm just old. This was my first experience in as being an adult in the free world, so I had to figure out that whole process by myself. And it took up until about December for me to figure it out and get the fees waived and everything like that. So that's why it took so long for me to get back to work. But as soon as I got it squared away, I got a job immediately. I last year, and I was pursuing my associate's degree in business management and accounting, so that's also what I had going on at that time.
Okay, it also says that you completed the correctional healthcare career criminal class back in May of 2018?
Yeah.
Okay, so it looks like in here, sir, that you have been staffed back in January of 2019 with your PO. At that time, you admitted to getting into a car accident on September 30th. 2018 and bailing out of the car and walking away. He said that I'm just going through. It says that reported that your girlfriend was injured in the car accident that required medical attention. And you stated that you was unaware of any other injuries. Is that so or what?
No.
So what happened?
No, that's not true. Well, actually on January 16th, I was called by PO Rivera. And I called him, and during that conversation, he told me about that Phoenix PD had contacted him about an accident that they said that I was involved in on September 30th. He told me that that my driver's license was in the car, that my girlfriend was in the accident, and that something about they planned on charging me with a misdemeanor for leaving the scene of the accident. And he told me to come into the office the next day. I worked from 6:30 to 3, and I had concerns about whether or not I could make it to the office by 4 from 51st Avenue or whatnot. So I asked him, could I just come into the office that day? I left work early in my day. And when I arrived, I actually, based on a conversation with him, I was under the impression that the parole office was going to be facilitating the interview between me and Phoenix PD. Because this happened in September 30th last year, and they're getting contacted about this now, so I'm thinking, like, okay, well, most likely that's what was going on. So I called a lawyer, and I told him about the call with my PO, and he agreed with me that most likely they were facilitating an interview with PD, and that what would have happened was the charge would probably have been what it ended up being was a failure to remain at team. And it's a misdemeanor to most likely what would happen is PD would interview me and cite me, possibly boot me, and I will be OR when I go in front of the judge in the court. They will be set to deal with the issue. That didn't happen. I arrived at the parole office, and Ms. Gross met me and took me to the back. Immediately I was asked, why was I here? I told him about the call with me and Mr. Rivera. Again, I was asked, no, why are you here? I mean, I took that to imply that they wanted me to basically give up the goods or tell them. But what struck me about is the parole office had just been contacted by PD that I was going to be charged with this. So struck me as odd is that they didn't inform me of my rights. So I mean, at that point, I didn't say nothing that would incriminate me. I mean, y'all trying to question me about something that I'm about to get charged with, and y'all not telling me my rights. But, Ms. Rose, she already had a theory about what she felt happened, and she gave me three scenarios. One was that I got in this accident and tried to drive a stall car off, which was false. The second was that I was driving on a suspended license, which was also false. My license never been suspended. And the third was I bailed out the car and ran off, which is also false. My issue that I have with this from the time that I received the arrest from the violation report is, well, first of all, there's no audio recording of this interview. I mean, if PD would have been allowed to interview me, then there would be audio recording of the interview, which would verify the fact him. I'm not even being allowed to go to court, and I had a court date on the 15th, apparently, and I contacted all the powers that be to try to make sure that before my board hearing, I was allowed to vote, so that we can clear the situation up. Because the allegation is, or the violation allegation is that I failed to obey all city, county, state laws, in this case, city laws. If I'm not even being allowed to go in front of the city court to address whether or not I broke the city law, how can it be determined that I broke the city law? That doesn't even make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Okay, so
I'm being accused of breaking the law, but I'm not even being allowed to go to court to confront my accusers, and then I'm pled the fifth. And I seem like I'm being penalized for pleading the fifth when by law, it's the burden of proof isn't on me to prove that I didn't do this. The burden of proof is on the prosecutor to prove that I did this, and I'm not being able to go to court to even confront my accusers on this. That doesn't even make any sense.
Okay, let me go real through a couple things, because you had your probable cause hearing with the probable cause officer. They did establish probable cause during that period of time. We're in phase two, and so basically this is, we're not a court of law, so this is your hearing for your parole violation. Revocation is what we're here for today, and I'm not sure you had the misdemeanor DV charges and as well as the other charges. That's going to be taken care of. There's no indication that those have already been dismissed, taken care of. I assume that those cases are all pending at this time, sir. So, you know, I do understand, you know, what you're saying, however, that's not going to be really relevant to where we are at this time. So, let me see, sir, if the board has any additional questions for you. Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones?
Yes, sir.
I just want to understand something, because you've explained quite a bit this morning, and I appreciate that. Were you in a car accident?
No.
Okay, so you're saying that you weren't even there?
Yes.
Okay. No further questions, thank you.
All right, so if there's no other questions, I do have just one other question, because there is a statement in here that the parole officer said that you did later admit to being in the car. Is there anything to that, sir?
It's just like I said, when I went to the parole office, I went fully prepared to meet with PHP. That's what I was under the impression that I was going to do. And to face whatever allegation that was against me in regards to this accident situation or even this team. When I arrived and I went to and I was escorted into the back of the office, when the interview began with parole officer Bruce, and I wasn't informed of my rights. I mean, at that point, there was nothing that I said. My rights, I'm not even being named. My rights aren't even being acknowledged. That's not true. She already had her mind made up on what she thought happened, and they didn't have a police report at that time. So
are you saying that you weren't involved in an incident with your girlfriend?
Yes.
All right. I see. Ms. Rittenhouse.
Mr. Jones, at any time while you were on community supervision, did you consume alcohol?
No.
Mr. Turner.
Yes, sir. For the record, per the OMS notes on 116-2019, his parole officer, Pedro Rivera, was contacted by the Phoenix Police Department, and he was informed that Jones was in a hit-and-run accident on September 30, 2018. He was driving and had a suspended license. Gives the report number of 2018-00001736948. Stated it was a Class 2 misdemeanor because the ex-girlfriend did not want to press charges. If she did, it would have been a felony, not a misdemeanor.
Okay. All right, Mr. Jones, we're coming up on a conclusion of your hearing, sir. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the board without repeating yourself at this time before we go into discussion?
All I'm going to say is I did 15 and a half years in prison. I got out and I did pretty much everything that the parole office asked me to do. Pretty much turned my life around. You know, it wasn't an easy process, but, you know, I powered through it, you know, and at the time that I was taken into custody, I was a full-time college student. I just started my family. My son actually this is Bosco.
Okay. All right, sir. I also have attorney here as well as victim here to speak. And at this time, Ms. Colleen Class. And Ms. Holbrook, did you want to speak?
Yes, I could.
Okay. At this time, Ms. Holbrook, can I swear you in at this time? Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, and do you so affirm?
I do.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Colleen Place with ABCB. I represent Ms. Holbrook, and we are asking that the board revoke Mr. Jones today. 2 months ago, I couldn't have imagined being here in front of this board. I'll tell you that, my apologies, my notes up. But we had a hearing on January 11th of this year, and I had an opportunity to personally talk with Mr. Jones. And the reason for that hearing was because he had stopped paying the restitution that he owes to Ms. Holbrook. And after I spoke with him, I felt very encouraged and hopeful for him, and he seemed to genuinely be remorseful and to accept responsibility for his actions. And he, although he hadn't paid restitution and initially had some excuses about having a baby on the way, which that is very important, but he still has this order and this commitment to pay restitution. He did acknowledge that his actions had put this family through a really bad time, the murder of Ms. Holbrook's son, and that he wanted to make it right. And he agreed that he would pay $100 a month in restitution, and he agreed to the imposition, to a CRO until the restitution is paid off. There's about a little over $3,000 balance between Mr. Jones and the other three co-defendants that still need to be paid. And I felt very hopeful, and Ms. Holbrook felt very hopeful too. Since January, we hadn't seen a restitution payment yet. And then when we found out this news, it really kind of destroyed the vision of hope that we have for him. He really did seem like he was getting his life on track, but now I wonder if that was just talk in the hearing. We are concerned about the non-payment of restitution, and then in addition, today it doesn't seem like Mr. Jones is accepting responsibility for his actions and doesn't recognize he does have rights, and I don't deny that, but this is also still a violation of his supervision, and he appears to be blaming everyone and everybody and everything else. The first time being an adult in the free world, you know, there are a lot of people that start out on their own, and they find a way to make it and to live a life without being involved in criminal offenses. But Ms. Holbrook will talk to you, and she does want to show you a couple of pictures, but she will also be asking that you revoke Mr. Jones.
Okay, thank you. You can.
Good morning to the board.
Good morning.
My name is Carolyn Holbrook, the mother of Brett Holbrook, which happens to be a picture I thought I'd show. This is a real picture. This drawing here was done by inmates at Florence last November as a member of the Parents of Murdered Children group. Many of us go down to speak to the inmates through their classes. And to show the appreciation, we were approached and said, if you've got a picture, we'd like to go ahead and do that for you folks. So this was something that's really special to me and my family for having that done. And sorry to say, but I did not get to meet the inmate due to, as soon as he finished this, had some kind of this incident, and he was stuck in solitary confinement. But I thought he did a fantastic job.
He did. It looks
great. And just kind of a picture here. This was the last picture taken a month before Brett was murdered. And he was 17 years old. eventually four youths were caught, and you pretty well know the story, I believe. And Mr. Jones was one of those four people involved. At the time, we went with a plea agreement with three of the four. And Mr. Jones, I felt he and another one of the other individuals could be an asset to society once they did their time in jail. They are in prison. And in fact, at the last hearing with Mr. Jones, afterwards, I spoke to his mother and his brother, and they assured me that they had a plan for him once Mr. Jones came out, that they would see that he would live with his mom. He has a brother in Texas that he would be looking for a job once everything got settled here. He had a fiance, and things looked like that everything had been planned. And like my attorney said, we met in January, and he was one of the two talking about restitution. And I must reassure you that the money is not going to bring my son back. That's not the point. The point is that these four individuals were involved with the loss of my son, and they were ordered to pay restitution to reimburse us for the funeral and other expenses that were involved. And this happened in 2002, and it's taken this long for, and still is, as Colleen said, still over $3,000, because they don't make a whole lot in prison, I don't know. I believe that he's been given enough chances that I've tried to be fair. There's a lot of victims that wouldn't go that far. I have, from the time it happened, my son, before he passed, I said I have forgiven those that were the ones that took his life. And from that point, I have not let these four gentlemen control my life, but I am going to make sure that it's a fair situation. And I believe I've been fair enough, my family has been fair enough with Mr. Jones, and believe that he needs to go back to prison and serve out his time.
Okay. Thank you. The board have any questions? Thank you, Ms. Holbrook.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Mr. Jones? Sir, the board is coming up on a conclusion of your hearing. At this time, I'll give you one more opportunity to see if there's anything else you'd like to say without repeating yourself before the board goes on to discussion.
I would just like to again apologize to Mr. Holbrook's mom for the actions of me and my co-defendants. You know, I mean, there's no excuse for it, and you know, I have no arguments against what she's saying. I had full intentions in January after our meeting at court to honor the payment plan that we had arranged, and this was an unexpected turn of events. That's why I wasn't able to honor that. But I apologize for the loss. I apologize for the part that I played in it. And I'm planning on, as soon as I get out of prison, I plan on, I know the money doesn't make it right, but I plan on reimbursing the family as far as what I'm owed with the restitution. So, I mean, again, I apologize, and I apologize that this hearing has you out here having to relive the death of your son again. I apologize now.
Okay, so I just need to make sure you address the board, but we're going to go ahead and continue on. The board's going to go into discussion. While the board's in discussion, Mr. Jones, I'm going to ask you to remain on the line so that you can hear the conversation taking place amongst the board. And the board will make a decision at that time whether to revoke or reinstate you on your community supervision, okay? However, remain silent while you're on the phone, sir. The board is now going into discussion. We've had the opportunity to speak with Mr. Jones as well as review the files and also a letter that he has attached to the file. This is an incident that occurred. There's a conflict. Mr. Jones is saying that he wasn't there. However, the police officer's report, his driver's license was found in the vehicle. There was an incident with his girlfriend who says that he was, appears that he was basically there to be in a domestic violence incident. The officer says that he was identified. There's a statement in here that the PO says that he also admitted to the PO of actually being there at the actual scene. However, at this point in time, Mr. Jones has denied being in an accident or even being in the scene. However, he does admit that his driver's license was found inside the car. Based on all the information that we have and the information that we received today, Mr. Jones has a release date of July 2nd, 2020. At this time, I do not see Mr. Jones being a good candidate to be released back out on community supervision. Go ahead, Norman.
Thanks, sir. I want to just reiterate the part about even though he claims he wasn't involved in the accident, there was sufficient evidence at the time. Whether he would be charged or not is entirely up to the investigators, and as far as the felony hit and run because of the injuries, that would be, I would understand where a victim might control how they handle that. But he was arrested for DV. There's an independent witness says there was an argument, a TV thrown out and broken. And then when he was arrested, the PD said that he appeared to be intoxicated, and the police officer is not going to make that observation unless they smell the odor, observe the way the person acts and everything. And I'm going to agree with you based on everything I have here. It seems that Mr. Jones is not really a good candidate for some community supervision at this time.
So no other comment, then I am going to make a motion and move to revoke the community supervision of Mr. Jones, find that he was delinquent, that he did violate the terms and conditions of his supervision, and he had lapses about the lapse into criminal ways or company.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by myself. Second, Mr. Muir. Agreed. Mr. Quinones, Ms. Rittenhouse, Dr. Wright. Okay, Mr. Jones. So the board has voted to revoke your community supervision. You have a release date of July 2nd, 2020. At that time, you won't be on any parole or community supervision unless something else comes up. Mr. Jones, I do want to thank you for taking the time and opportunity to appear before this board. I also want to thank Ms. Holbrook and Ms. Cullis for coming here and appearing before this board. This is going to conclude your hearing at this time, sir. Thank you again for participating in the hearing at this time. Please don't hang up the phone, but set it down so the next person could come in.